Pretty sure this is where we were, right? Still talking about the relationship between the hypothalamus and the pituitary. We've already talked about the fact that the pituitary is actually more than a gland, even though we call the whole thing the pituitary gland. It really is two lobes, only one of which is a gland. Which lobe is the gland? The anterior pituitary, which goes by what other name? Adenohypophysis. Correct. What's the other name for the posterior pituitary or the posterior lobe? Neurohypophysis. Right. There is a connection between the hypothalamus and the pituitary for each of the two lobes. And that connection, of course, involves the infundibulum. The infundibulum refers to the whole stalk that physically connects hypothalamus with the pituitary or hypophysis. But there's two separate types of connections, which makes sense because the anterior lobe is different from the posterior lobe functionally and histologically. So in the front of the infundibulum, leading to the adenohypophysis or anterior pituitary, is a network of vessels called the hypothalamo-hypophyseal portal system. Spelled just like it sounds. Hypothalamo-hypophyseal portal system. Now, it's one portal system in the body, not the only one. We'll talk about other portal systems in different systems. But anyone have any idea what a portal system is? Okay. If you think about circulation, you probably already know something about the circulatory system. The normal routing of blood is that, if we say it, let's start at the heart. That blood exits the heart through arteries, right? Arteries are vessels that carry blood away from the heart. Those arteries then branch into smaller and smaller arterioles and eventually to capillaries, which is where exchange between the blood and the tissues takes place, right? Those capillaries then don't divide. They're already the smallest vessels. Those capillaries join together into, as tributaries of rivers do, into bigger and bigger streams, which make up the venules first and then the veins, bigger and bigger vessels, right? These are veins, which are vessels that return blood to the heart. And then you're back to the heart. So, normally there is only one capillary bed in that entire circuit from heart back to the heart. Arteries, capillary bed, veins, and then back to the heart to start again. Okay, that's the normal situation. A portal system is an exception to that. In a portal system, there are two capillary beds in series, one first and then another. And then back to the heart. The hypothalamo-hypophyseal portal system is just a specific example of a portal system. So there's blood that comes through arteries to the hypothalamus. Those get smaller and smaller until you have a capillary bed surrounding the cells of the hypothalamus itself. Okay, that would be just like the normal situation. Those vessels then get joined together and get bigger into venules, which in the normal situation would get even bigger into veins and go directly back to the heart. But since it's a portal system, the venules, which are in this the front of the infundibulum, as you see here, these venules, instead of joining together and making bigger and bigger veins, They then branch, which is unusual for veins. Veins usually join together, not branch apart. They branch into the second capillary bed, which is what makes it a portal system. And that second capillary bed, not very far away from the first one, which was up in the hypothalamus, the second capillary bed surrounds the cells that make up the adenohypophysis, or the anterior pituitary. And the adenohypophysis, being the glandular part of the pituitary, is made up of endocrine cells histologically. Right? Those cells that make up the adenohypophysis, the entire cells are entirely within the anterior pituitary. And so they are surrounded by this second capillary bed of the hypothalamo-hypophyseal portal system. Then it's just like the normal situation. Those capillaries lead to venules that join into bigger and bigger veins and then back to the heart. But if you think about it as a trip from the heart originally, you go arteries to capillaries to venules to capillaries again, then to veins, and then back to the heart. Any questions on what I mean by a portal system then? Okay. Let's think about why this works. The neurons that make up the hypothalamus, or at least let's just restrict our attention to the neurons of the hypothalamus that are involved with the anterior part of the pituitary. So those neurons begin and end in the hypothalamus. They are entirely within the hypothalamus. Okay? They produce neurohormones. And I say that they're neurohormones, why, compared to neurotransmitters? What is different about a neurohormone compared to a neurotransmitter? It is not anything about what type of molecule it is. It's not a chemical distinction. It's a functional distinction. Right, it's released by the neuron into the bloodstream instead of just into a synaptic cleft. So that's what's happening up here where the yellow neurons end. At those axon terminals, which are up in the hypothalamus, that's where the neurohormones produced by those neurons are released, and they get collected by the blood that's in that first capillary bed, the hypothalamic capillary bed of the portal system. Now, normally hormones, once they're in the blood, get broadcast all over the body, everywhere blood goes. And some of these do make it all the way around the body, but really there's only one place in the body where they have any receptors and therefore have any effect. And that's the very short distance away, namely the cells that make the endocrine cells that make up the anterior pituitary. So these neurohormones that get produced by the hypothalamus and get delivered into the first capillary bed of the hypothalamo-hypophyseal portal system just have to travel the short distance through the venules that make up the anterior part of the infundibulum to get to the second capillary bed, where they leave the bloodstream through the spaces in those capillaries and encounter their target cells, which are the cells that make up the anterior pituitary. All right? So they're not really broadcast throughout the body because most of them leak out right away before they get back to the heart and get sent everywhere else. Now, the pituitary as a whole, the entire hypothesis, produces 8 hormones. That's wrong. The hypothalamus produces 8 hormones, 6 of which affect the anterior pituitary, 2 of which are released from the posterior pituitary. Okay? The posterior pituitary as I was describing before, last time, is really just an extension of the hypothalamus. It's not endocrine, histologically. It's not a gland. It's really just the ends of neurons that started, that have their beginnings in the hypothalamus. So neurons are long cells, right? The cell bodies are up in the hypothalamus. Then they have long axons, which like typical neurons, that extend through the back half of the infundibulum. The posterior part of that infundibulum is just a bundle of axons, of neurons that started out in the hypothalamus. The axon terminals make up the posterior pituitary, along with neuroglial cells, which are also nervous tissue cells, right? Nervous tissue is made up of two categories of cells, neurons and neuroglia, as you learned in 201. So the axon terminals of neurons, hypothalamic neurons, plus various neuroglial cells is what makes up the neurohypothesis. That's why it's called neurohypothesis. And so this doesn't have anything to do with the portal system. There is no blood stream there. Instead, the back half of the infundibulum, the connection between the hypothalamus and the neurohypothesis, has a different name. It's not the hypothalamo-hypophyseal portal system. It's the hypothalamo-hypophyseal tract. Now that makes sense calling it that, right? Because what is a tract in general? Everyone hear that? Obviously not. Yell!
No.
Speak as loudly as I am if you want participation credit.
In a central nervous system.
Right, a bundle of axons in the central nervous system, in the brain or the spinal cord. That's exactly what this is. It's an extension of the hypothalamus. So it's officially brain, really. And since it's a bundle of axons, it's a tract. Okay, so the hypothalamo-hypophyseal portal system is distinct from the hypothalamo-hypophyseal tract and involves different chemicals. The hypothalamic neurons that release their hormones into the portal system, those are shorter axons because they begin and end in the hypothalamus. They release those neurohormones into the portal system. Those neurohormones travel to the adenohypophysis, and then they affect the cells in that adenohypophysis. The hormones that are released, the neurons in the that are involved with the posterior lobe are longer neurons. Their cell bodies are up in the hypothalamus. Their axons make up the hypothalamo-hypophyseal tract, and then the axon terminals, which is why they're so long, end up in the neurohypophysis. So the hormones that are released by the posterior pituitary, those are really neurohormones because they're being released by neurons. They're not being released by endocrine cells. Now, where are those neurohormones that are released by the posterior pituitary produced? Well, if they're being released by neurons, where are they being produced? Well, yeah, but narrow it down a little bit more. If a neurohormone is being released by a neuron, by definition, if it's being released by a neuron, what is producing it? The neuron, yes. The neuron creates its own signals, right? Whether it's neurotransmitters or neurohormones. What part of the cell, though, the neuron, does that creation of the signal take place? Where are the chemicals produced? In the cell body, right. Otherwise called the neurosoma. That's where the nucleus is, which is the original instructions for how to build the stuff. And the machinery for actually assembling the proteins is in that neurosoma as well. So that's where the hormones are produced, up in the hypothalamus proper. They get released from the axon terminals, though, so they have to move by cellular trafficking down the length of that axon so that they can then be stored ready to go in vesicles when they get the signal to be released. But they get stored in vesicles in the axon terminals, which are down in the posterior pituitary. All right? So they're manufactured up in the hypothalamus, stored temporarily in vesicles at the other end of that same neuron, which is what makes up the neurohypophysis, and then they're released from the neurohypophysis into the general circulation, into the normal bloodstream. Nothing to do with the portal system. All right, that's why they're neurohormones. They're being released into the bloodstream. So those two hormones, which we'll talk about eventually, are just like any other hormone. They get broadcast throughout the body. Some things have receptors for them, some don't. But the only difference compared to an endocrine hormone is that it was released by a neuron instead of an endocrine cell. Still into the general circulation, though. All right? You can see in slide 7 that there is indeed a histological difference, not just a functional difference, and developmental difference that I talked about last time as well. There's a histological difference when you look at the cell types that make up the anterior portion or lobe and the posterior lobe. You can see the difference at the histological level. So the endocrine portion, once again, is the adenohypophysis, the anterior part. When you look at that and stain it properly, you can see that they are glandular cells. They're not long neurons. That's what I meant by saying that the cells are entirely in the anterior pituitary. They're not just extensions of cells. By the way, these chromophobe, basophil, and acidophil, these are just general names that describe whether or not they take up certain kinds of dyes. It's not really the specific type of cell, it's category, so don't worry about that. But when you look at the posterior pituitary histology, you see different kinds of cells. These are, like I said earlier today, the ends of the axons of the neurons that started out in the hypothalamus, plus neuroglial cells, nervous tissue support cells that aren't neurons officially, but that help neurons, that support them in one way or another. Okay, now to 8. There's another table, and what we're looking here are hormones that are hypothalamic. They're called hypothalamic hormones because the hypothalamus produces them. But these are just those hypothalamic hormones that involve the anterior pituitary. So they're not all of the hypothalamic hormones. All right. Notice here that there are 6. I said a little bit earlier that there are 8 overall hypothalamic hormones. 6 of those affect the anterior pituitary. The other 2 are released from the posterior pituitary. That's not what we're looking at here. We're looking at the ones that affect the anterior pituitary. So keep in mind that for the front part, it's a 2-stage thing that's happening here, because the hormones released by the hypothalamus on through the portal system are going to actually cause release of other hormones produced by those endocrine cells of the anterior pituitary. So that's one hormone first and then another. But in the posterior part, it's just one hormone because those are just released from that one neuron that started out in the hypothalamus. Everyone clear on what I'm getting at there? Okay. So these 6 hypothalamic hormones that affect the adenohypophysis are broadly categorized as either releasing hormones or inhibiting hormones. Obviously named for what effect they have on the endocrine cells that make up the anterior pituitary. Releasing hormones, that general category, are called that because the effect of that hormone on the target tissue, which are the certain cells of the anterior pituitary, is to cause those anterior pituitary cells to release a certain hormone, whatever hormone it is for that given cell type. So the releasing hormones are hypothalamic hormones, but they cause the release of different hormones from the cells that make up the anterior pituitary. On the other hand, inhibiting hormones, which are also hypothalamic hormones, suppress the release. They tell the cells of the endocrine cells of the adenohypophysis not to release their hormones. They inhibit the cells, in other words, from secreting the second hormone. And there are more releasing hormones than inhibiting hormones, but let's look at their names here. And you can get confused about hormones easily with the names because they're similar sounding words. But as always, not just in school but in life, it's important to consider the meanings of words to make sense of things. Let's look at these names. Thyrotropin releasing hormone, which is what TRH stands for. Obviously, it's an example of a releasing hormone, right? Here's where you can confuse yourself, though. Thyrotropin-releasing hormone is not a thyrotropin. Thyrotropin-releasing hormone is called that because its effect on the endocrine cells of the anterior pituitary is to cause them to release thyrotropin. All right? So thyrotropin-releasing hormone is not thyrotropin. Well, what does the word thyrotropin mean? Thyro refers to what? The thyroid gland, which we'll look at anatomically in a little bit. The thyroid gland is not the target tissue of thyrotropin releasing hormone. The tropin part, or tropic, refers to acting on. And therefore, a chemical that is a thyrotropin is called a thyrotropin because it acts on the thyroid. So the target of a thyrotropin is the thyroid gland. But as I said before, a thyrotropin releasing hormone is not a thyrotropin. So the target tissue of thyrotropin releasing hormone, and in fact the target tissue of all six of these hormones listed here, are cells of the anterior pituitary. And the anterior pituitary is a collection of cells of different types. They're all endocrine cells, but they specialize. They produce different products. Okay, so you have a population of cells that's producing one kind of anterior pituitary hormone. Others do produce their own hormones. All right? The subset of the overall population of cells in the anterior pituitary that respond to thyrotropin-releasing hormone are called thyrotropes. That's just some of the anterior pituitary cells. Those are the cells that have the correct kind of receptor proteins to recognize the presence of thyrotropin-releasing hormone that came through the portal system. And in response to that signal that came from the hypothalamus, the thyrotropes will release the actual thyrotropin, which is so called because it gets put into the bloodstream and will have its effect on the thyroid directly. All right, so thyrotropin-releasing hormone is a hormone that causes the release of thyrotropin, which also goes by the name thyroid-stimulating hormone, which then has the effect on the thyroid. And the effect on the thyroid is it causes the thyroid to release still another hormone, the thyroid hormones. All right? Everyone clear on that? The next one is corticotropin-releasing hormone. Similarly to the one above it, corticotropin-releasing hormone is not corticotropin. It causes the release of a corticotropin. A corticotropin is named for the fact that it is something that affects or acts on the adrenal cortex. Okay? The adrenal... What did I say is true about cortex? What's that general meaning? Some structures are kind of two-layered, right? Like the kidney or the adrenal glands. What does cortex mean? Yeah, the superficial of the two layers. That's why we say the cerebral cortex, not the deeper stuff. What's the word for the deeper part? Right, medulla or medulla. Okay, so there's an adrenal medulla that's wrapped by adrenal cortex, and they secrete different things, as we'll talk about when we get there. But a corticotropin is a hormone that tells the cells of the adrenal cortex to do something. That's not what corticotropin-releasing hormone is. Corticotropin-releasing hormone is a hormone produced by the shorter neurons of the hypothalamus, put into the portal system, travels down to the anterior portion of the pituitary, and reaches its target cells, which are another population of those pituitary cells, which are called corticotropes. Okay, the corticotropes recognize corticotropin-releasing hormone. They secrete a second hormone called adrenocorticotropic hormone, named for the fact that it directly affects the adrenal cortex. That's what adrenocorticotropic means. All right, gonadotropin-releasing hormone. Same story here. Gonadotropin-releasing hormone is not a gonadotropin. A gonadotropin is something that acts directly on the gonads. Gonadotropin-releasing hormone tells a third population of hypophyseal cells called gonadotropes to release gonadotropins. Those gonadotropins then enter the general circulation after that second capillary bed and eventually reach the gonads. In females, what are the gonads? Ovaries in females. Testes in males, yeah. So that's where the gonadotropins actually have their effect. Growth hormone releasing hormone is not growth hormone. It's a hormone that causes the release of growth hormone from the adenohypophysis. Now, the next one, notice, is an inhibiting hormone. Prolactin inhibiting hormone. Oh, by the way, I should have said, since I'm giving you the names of these individual populations of cells, so let's go back to growth hormone, releasing hormone for a second. The target of those cells is a fourth population of hypophyseal cells in the anterior pituitary called somatotropes. Okay? Now, growth hormone, releasing hormone, obviously is going to cause the release of growth hormone, right? Growth hormone has a second name besides growth hormone, which is somatotropin. What does somato mean? Body, right. Just like the soma of a neuron. The neurosoma means the body of the cell. And somatic cells are the cells that make up the body versus the germline cells. Okay, so somatotropin means acting on the whole body, basically. In the other instances, there were pretty specific ultimate target tissues, like the thyroid gland or the gonads. Growth hormone affects a lot of cells throughout the body, so it's called somatotropin or growth hormone. Well, growth hormone, releasing hormone, tells somatotropes in the adenohypophysis to release growth hormone or somatotropin. Now to prolactin inhibiting hormone. Obviously, this is going to cause the inhibition of prolactin release. It tells lactotropes, which are another population of cells in the anterior pituitary, not to release their hormone. That hormone is prolactin, if it's released. Prolactin inhibiting hormone, though, tells them not to release it. And why are they called that? Well, prolactin gets its name because it promotes lactation. What is lactation? Lactation is production of milk by the mammary or mammary glands. It has nothing to do with the release of that milk. Milk is produced after childbirth, but then it's stored in glands in the breast. It then gets released. Well, there are two different signals telling the body to make the milk to begin with, but not to waste it until there's a baby suckling on the nipple. So there's a separate signal and a separate hormone involved telling the breast glands to release that milk that's already been produced. Lactation refers to making the milk to begin with. And prolactin in a woman who is pregnant starts getting produced by lactotropes, still another population of those adenohypophysial cells. Just while she's pregnant still. But the prolactin doesn't really have any effect on the breast then, because it would be wasteful to actually make the milk until you need the milk, right? It gets ready for production of milk, though, by ramping up production of prolactin. And then right after parturition, which is childbirth, then it's going to have its effect and tell the breast to start producing milk, because it's going to be needed soon. Okay? But it still stays in the breast because a separate signal is necessary to actually release the milk through the nipples to the suckling infant or into the breast pump if you're using a breast pump. Okay. Somatostatin or somatostatin is the final one of the six. Remember, these are all hypothalamic hormones. Somatostatin or statin inhibits the secretion of growth hormone. Remember, growth hormone is alternatively called somatotropin. Somatostatin gets its name as in stasis, or staying the same, not changing, because it inhibits growth. Growth hormone obviously is named for the fact that it promotes growth of cells. Cell division and cell maturation is a major function of growth hormone. Now, obviously, that's really important when you're still growing, because you have to get bigger. But you use growth hormone throughout your life, because you're always renewing tissues. You're always calling for cell division. Somatotropin causes that. Somatostatin is a hypothalamic hormone that tells the somatotropes of the anterior pituitary not to produce somatotropin, which is growth hormone. All right? So notice that in growth hormone, by the way, growth hormone of the hormones that are released by the produced by and released by the anterior pituitary, which is not these ones, it's the ones that are released by the anterior pituitary. By far, growth hormone is the majority of what's released. The other ones are released in much smaller amounts. Growth hormone is released like at least 1,000 times more abundant than the other anterior pituitary hormones. But in the case of growth hormone, and that's kind of why it makes sense here, in the case of growth hormone release, there are two hypothalamic hormones controlling this. One that's ramping up release of growth hormone releasing hormone, and one that's turning it down, somatostatin. Now to 9. another table to enjoy. Here we're looking at the actual pituitary hormones. All right? So these are the, for the majority of these, for the anterior pituitary, for all the ones that are listed under anterior pituitary, these are the second hormone in line. Because the first hormone came from the hypothalamus, either as a releasing hormone or inhibiting hormone, right? If it was a releasing hormone, then a second hormone gets released, this time by the cells of the anterior pituitary. That's what these ones are. Now notice that most of the pituitary hormones are anterior pituitary hormones. There are only two that are posterior pituitary hormones. Okay, the other six are anterior. Now, hopefully it's already clear to you that the posterior pituitary hormones are properly classified both as neurohormones, right? They're not a second hormone in line. They're the first hormone because the posterior pituitary is just the collection of neuron endings of neurons that started out in the hypothalamus. So this is the first, those two are just the first hormone released, not the second. For the six that are anterior, they're the second hormone in line. Okay, well let's go through the anterior pituitary ones. Follicle stimulating hormone, which is what, of course, FSH stands for. The name says it all. Stimulates the follicle. But what's a follicle? Well, we're not talking about hair follicles here. We're talking about ovarian follicles. Follicles are the structures within ovaries that produce and eventually release eggs. Okay, so an egg develops within a follicle. Until such time, well, it either doesn't get chosen and it just dies, or it does get chosen and it releases that egg. That's what ovulation is. All right? Well, follicle stimulating hormone, which is released where? Anterior pituitary, gets put into the general circulation, doesn't have any effect on most of the body because it doesn't have those cells don't have the right receptors. The cells that do have the right receptors are in the ovaries in females. And when that follicle-stimulating hormone reaches those cells of the follicles in the ovaries, then it stimulates their growth. So follicles start out much smaller. They develop as the egg develops until ovulation occurs. All right. But also, in addition to producing gametes, which is a major function of gonads in general, including the ovaries, they're also produced, the gonads are also important as endocrine organs. They release hormones as well, of their own. All right? By the way, let me just say that the gonads for both sexes are kind of unusual in this respect because they, not only are they both exocrine and endocrine, and do you remember the distinction from 201? Glands can be either exocrine glands or endocrine glands. What's the difference? Well, you should know what an endocrine gland is at this point. We've been talking about it for 2 days. Endocrine glands are ones that release their product, their secretory product, into the bloodstream. Whereas, what's the hallmark of an exocrine gland? What structure does it have that endocrine glands don't? They have ducts. So endocrine glands are ductless, whereas exocrine glands have ducts. The duct is just a little passageway that collects the secretory product to be delivered to some surface, like the outer surface of your skin in the case of sweat glands, which are exocrine glands. All right, that's the difference between exocrine and endocrine. But the gonads, whether it's a testis or an ovary, is both exocrine and endocrine. The endocrine product are the hormones that they make, the sex hormones. The exocrine products are the actual gametes, so they're also unusual in that respect. Because not only are they exocrine, but the exocrine product is not just a molecule like it usually is, or a solution. It's actually a type of cell. It secretes a type of cell, which are the sperm and the eggs. Okay? Anyway, that's why follicle stimulation... I'm glad I remembered to mention this. Females reproductively are more complicated than men, than males. And therefore, these gonadotropins, as they're called, are named for what they do in females only, even though both males and females have them. We don't give them different names in the two sexes, just because that would be even more confusing. So they do different jobs in the two sexes, but they're called based, they're named based on what they do in females. But there are a couple types of gonadotropins. Remember, a gonadotropin is a general word that simply means acting on the gonads. Follicle-stimulating hormone acts on the gonads, so it is a type of gonadotropin. Luteinizing hormone also acts on the gonads, though. And so it's another type of gonadotropin. All right? But both of these names come from what happens in the female, not in the male, even though both males and females have both of these gonadotropins. Follicle-stimulating hormone, self-explanatory. Well, males don't have follicles in their testes, but they still use follicle-stimulating hormone, and in that case, it causes sperm production rather than maturation of eggs in females. Luteinizing hormone gets its name because in a follicle that is developing an egg within it, when that egg is ready, it gets released. That's ovulation. What's left behind, the rest of the follicle, now undergoes a change, not only anatomically, but it changes its name as well. We no longer call it a follicle. We call it a corpus luteum. And we'll talk more about this in the reproductive chapter. But corpus luteum literally means yellow body, because that's what it looks like. It doesn't have the egg anymore when it's the corpus luteum. Well, to get to a structure that's called the corpus luteum, you have to lose an egg. Therefore, ovulation can also be called luteinization, because you're making that corpus luteum by losing the egg. Well, luteinizing hormone brings about ovulation. So it causes the creation of the corpus luteum. That's why it gets its name in females. Same name in males, but in males it causes certain cells in the testes that we'll look at later to produce testosterone, which is a sex hormone. Okay, so those are the two gonadotropins. Thyroid stimulating hormone is the official name of the next one, but it can also be called a thyrotropin because it directly affects the thyroid hormone. Thyroid stimulating hormone is produced by the thyrotropes, as I said, in response to the hypothalamus sending it thyrotropin-releasing hormone. Thyrotropin-releasing hormone tells the thyrotropes of the adenohypophysis to release thyrotropin itself, which is thyroid-stimulating hormone, TSH. That then travels in the general circulation until it reaches the thyroid gland, and it causes release of a third hormone in line, the hormones of the thyroid gland themselves, which are sometimes just called thyroid hormone, even though there's two versions of it. Some books call it the thyroid hormones, but TH refers to both of them. All right? Adrenocorticotropic hormone, ACTH. We've already talked about why it gets its name. Its target tissue is the adrenal cortex. Where are the adrenal glands? Right, they wrap around the top edge of the kidneys, which is why they're called that. Renal means of the kidneys. Adrenal means on the kidneys. So adrenal is really adrenal. The adrenal cortex, I mean, the adrenal gland is, like we talked about before, has a cortex and a medulla. They do different things. They release different chemicals. The adrenal cortex actually releases several different chemicals that we'll talk about once we look at the adrenal gland in detail. But adrenocorticotropic hormone causes the adrenal gland cells, the cortical cells, to grow and mature, and then to, once they are mature, release their secretory products, which are called glucocorticoids. Now, they're called, they have that oid ending because glucocorticoids, and stay with me here, the glucocorticoids are not what the pituitary produces. The glucocorticoids are the ones that are finally released from their adrenal glands. The oid ending refers that they are steroid hormones as opposed to protein hormones. That's a chemical distinction. So the sex hormones are also steroid hormones. Well, some of the steroid hormones come from the adrenal cortex. And that's why they're called corticoids. They're steroids that come from the cortex of the adrenal gland. And more specifically, they're called glucocorticoids because their job, once they get released to the general circulation from the adrenal cortex, is to regulate metabolism of glucose, among other fuels. Okay, so glucocorticoids get released in response to receiving adrenocorticotropic hormone from the adrenal gland. I'm sorry, from the pituitary gland. All right, everyone good? Let's go down to prolactin then. We've already talked about prolactin releasing hormone. It gets released in response to... we talked about prolactin inhibiting hormone. When there is low level of prolactin inhibiting hormone, prolactin will be released by the pituitary gland. But if it is released, its target tissues are the mammary glands and the testes. I already talked about the effect on the mammary glands. It produces milk in those glands that's then stored until it's needed by the infant. In males, it doesn't produce milk. It causes increased sensitivity to luteinizing hormone. All right? Growth hormone. What's another name for growth hormone? You haven't kept all these words straight today? Well, what? Growth hormone affects the whole body. Somato what? There's two somato words, somatotropin and somatostatin. Somatotropin, because growth hormone induces growth. It doesn't tell the body to stay the same, it tells it to grow. Okay? So growth hormone, GH, its official name, but when you see somatotropin, equate it with that. That has a much more widespread set of target tissues, not just one gland like the other ones did that will then produce still another hormone. Growth hormone affects various tissue types and differently depending on which stage of life you're in. But widespread tissue growth, especially in these stated target tissues. Skeleton grows, the muscles grow, and so on. All right, those are the adenohypophyseal hormones, or the hormones of the anterior pituitary. There's only two pituitary hormones left. Those are the ones that are the neurohypophyseal hormones, hormones of the posterior pituitary. And those two are ADH, which stands for antidiuretic hormone, and oxytocin. OT. Now, antidiuretic hormone gets its name because it suppresses diuresis. What is diuresis? D-I-U-R-E-S-I-S. Diuresis is not. The UR part of that should tell you that urine is involved, right? Diuresis is the production of a lot of dilute urine. Where does the urine come from? Blood. Urine is just blood that's been filtered. put in reverse, blood is urine with other things mixed in. So if you're making a lot of urine that's very watery, that's diuresis. The kidney adjusts how watery the urine is when it produces it. Water gets filtered out no matter what. But sometimes the kidney puts the water back into the blood. Sometimes it leaves it out of the blood and keeps it as part of the urine. It keeps it as part of the urine under conditions of diuresis. All right? Well, that's not what ADH causes. ADH is named for the fact that it is against diuresis. It's anti-diuretic. So ADH is released by the posterior pituitary in times when you can't afford to waste that water. You want to keep it in the blood under conditions of dehydration, for instance. Right? ADH is released by the posterior pituitary. And functionally, what kind of hormone is ADH? What did you say? Well, that's not what I mean. What I was looking for is that it is a neurohormone, right? It's part of the posterior pituitary, so it's coming directly from an axon ending, not an endocrine cell. So it's a neurohormone, just as oxytocin is. Both of these posterior pituitary hormones are neurohormones. That gets released when the brain senses that you can't afford to lose the water. And then when it reaches the kidney, it tells the kidneys, go ahead and filter the water out because you don't have any choice, but then bring it back into the blood so it doesn't stay in the urine. Oxytocin, last one. Oxytocin is interesting because it's involved in a positive feedback mechanism, and positive feedback mechanisms are more unusual by far than negative feedback mechanisms. Why is that, by the way? Exactly, because homeostasis is possible only with negative feedback. Positive feedback can never lead to homeostasis. Only negative feedback can. Positive feedback makes whatever the error is even bigger, whereas negative feedback makes the error smaller. It keeps the variable at the set point or close to it. Well, the set point here has to do with parturition, childbirth. So when the fetus gets big enough, its head, usually if it's in the correct position, which will be upside down, will eventually stretch the lower part of the uterus. The lining of that uterus is innervated. There's a bunch of neurons connected to it that sense the stretching. That stretching causes the neurons to fire, to create action potentials, which get sent as signals to the brain, specifically the hypothalamus hears about this. The hypothalamus then tells the cells, the neurons that start out in the hypothalamus but then end up in the posterior pituitary, to release oxytocin, which they'd already made beforehand, right? So when I was talking about making it and then sending it down the axon and then storing it in vesicles. When the stretching occurs, those vesicles exocytotically release the oxytocin into the bloodstream, like you would expect for a hormone. Travels to all parts of the body, but the uterus is what responds to it. It responds by contracting. Uterine is muscular. The uterus is muscular. When it squeezes, especially at the fundus, which is the top part of the uterus, the blind end, that pushes the fetus even lower, causing the head to stretch the lower part of the uterus even more. This is why it's a positive feedback mechanism. When it stretches even more, that sends even a stronger signal through the neurons to the brain, causing release of even more oxytocin, and it just keeps building until the kid pops out. All positive feedback mechanisms are temporary, either because you die, because homeostasis isn't renewed, or because, in the case of childbirth, the kid finally pops out, in which case negative feedback mechanisms take over to save her life. All right? So, looks like that's pretty good timing to stop. Was it really?
Yeah.